This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Marketing Mojo and Resource Center, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. Li Jiaping, the managing partner of the Listening Tree, is here with me to take us through part four in this series on branding. Today, we're looking at creating structures to take brands to internal and external audiences. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
I think we'd probably need to recap a little bit so that we can lead into today's discussion.
Yeah, that's a good point because we have gone through a lot, Soon Heng.
We started with coming up with your values, your mission.
Your brand promise.
Your brand promise, your values.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have that, then you start looking at your products, your people, your processes.
Your place. And your publicity.
So after that, where do we go?
What we've done in the last three weeks is we've talked about setting up a strategy. But then, as with vision, you need to actually put it in place. Otherwise, it's just a nice framed, you know, statement behind the receptionist.
I know the feeling.
So what we need to do today, we're going to talk about structures, about getting your brand implemented and aligned throughout the organization.
When I think about structures, I think in terms of organization, this is the head, this is the body, this is the operational.
So that's one part of the structure. That's an organizational structure. That's how you basically structure your resources to do what you need to do to get to your goals, right? The structure we're talking about today with regards to brands are structures such as corporate identity guidelines. Corporate identity guidelines are how your logo looks, how it looks when it's applied, you know, on various forms like billboards, buntings, ads. Then you have ad templates. Then what happens when you have co-branding, when your logo shares the same space with another logo? So like sponsorships, when you sponsor things, you see all the logos at the bottom.
Right.
How does then your logo behave, you know, when it comes to sharing a platform?
So it must not be below certain people.
Yeah, or different
brands.
Colors. You know, sometimes people tend to stretch logos.
Mm.
So, you know, it's very subtle. You might not notice, but, you know, it really makes a difference. Or people tend to design logos with only one color background. And that's very limiting when you co-brand, when you share with other people, because then you can't control the background. You know, like say you sponsor a concert and so your logo has to be on the concert leaflet. So you can't dictate what the background of the concert leaflet.
Your logo might look best if it's a white background. Suddenly
yes.
It's like black.
Yes.
And you might just disappear into it.
That's right. So all of these things have to be thought through by the graphic designers who are doing your logos. So that's structure. Your logo can't be too near to the edge because it might be cropped out by the printing press and all of that.
As you are telling me this, I'm thinking about, you know, in the pre-internet days, before people undertook to put banner ads and all that, you probably didn't think about how my logo would appear in a banner ad.
Internet is actually a facsimile of real life because, so a banner ad on an internet, on a computer screen, is actually like a banner ad that someone would hang off a balcony. So it's actually the same, but you shrink it down in terms of proportion. When you talk about having structure, you talk about having design templates that manage those proportions. What happens when it shrinks down? What happens when it's, you know, vertical? So all of that is a template or a structure for how your brand looks. So that's about looking. That's about publicity. What about people and processes? So the next structure for people and processes is what we call brand standards. Everybody's familiar with SOPs, standard operating procedure. The good SOPs will actually say this SOP is here to solve a problem. The very run-of-the-mill SOP will just say, do steps. Steps 1 to 5, and you can't deviate from that step 1 to 5 to accomplish a certain task. So let's say answering the phone. Step 1, answer within 3 rings. Step 2, greet in a nice voice. All that is fine. But if you want to build a brand and you want to build a thinking culture, you say, we don't mind how you answer the phone, you know, as long as you solve the problem in a way that matches our brand. So if you say our brand is all about friendly and caring while solving problems is you automatically pick up the phone, you know, and sound caring. You're not going to go, hello, you've come to whatever.
So the other one is more mechanical in a way. Like you say, ring more than three times.
Yeah.
So first or second ring, you try to reach it and you pick it up and then you answer it and you say, okay, you must always answer. This is,
and there's a script, yeah, yes.
This is BFM. I'm Lim Soon Heng. Yes. How can I help you?
Yes. Right?
So
yes,
that's the programmatic, mechanical one.
Yeah, robotic system. I mean, it's great for factories. Don't get me wrong. You do need that kind of thing where there's no time for thinking. Some of them, when you're on the assembly floor, there's really no time to think. You just want them to actually do something, repetitive movements. But when you talk about a service industry or where you're on a front line, what's really good is getting people to think about solving the problem first. When a customer calls, please identify what the problem is. And if you're not solved the problem, which is you haven't got him through to the person he wants to speak to, the next thing is you should then say, how can I help you? What seems the problem? Can I leave a message for you? And things like that. That's much more interactive rather than, hi, you've reached the voicemail of Mr. So-and-so at extension so-and-so, which doesn't solve my problem.
You know, I like what you're saying to me. For instance, here at BFM, we also answer the telephone, but I'm not sure if we all have a SOP for that. But in some ways, I guess the very fact that we are in a particular industry where,
yes,
communication is the very basis of what we do, then we should all know how to answer the phone.
Yes. I mean, that's great now. I think what's great with BFM is you have great hiring structure. So you know the right type of people to hire with your brand. So A, they have to be, you know, eloquent, they have to be able to speak, they have to be pleasant. So that is already a parameter that you've put in place. So then if you've already got those type of people, you may not need the structure. But if your hiring parameters are not clearly set and you hire based on technical competencies rather than behavioral competencies and, you know, and manner, this is a problem. You know, or big organizations where, you know, anybody that answers the phone needs to have this structure. Right? You know, you can't have your receptionist sounding warm and friendly and then the person who picks up the phone not warm and friendly, or not, you know, doesn't even have the language to actually communicate. Right? So you do need those structures in place.
When you say structures, do you mean they have to be documented also?
Many companies do document it so that when a newcomer comes in, they know what to expect in terms of performance, what's expected out of them in terms of performance. And they already think, oh, okay, you know, I now know what type of company this is or organization this is and how I'm expected to behave and perform. So that comes into brand standards. So brand standards can be as simple as how to pick up the phone, how to solve the problem when someone calls your company, to emergency situations as what happens when people get stuck in a lift.
You know what I don't understand is why are these things so important as part of the brand?
If you're in the service industry or if you're running a company that interacts with external customers, you need to have consistency. Great brands all become great because of the consistency of experience. So brand standards document the type of experience you want the customer to experience. So if you don't document it, then what's happening is you have one person who's this, doing it in his style, and then you have another person, totally different, doing it in his style, in a totally different manner, which may not be consistent with your brand. Right? Because people bring in different types of personalities,
sure,
and behaviors,
sure,
to work. So how do you make sure that everybody kind of toes the brand line? So you need to set up an established structure. Or your hiring structure is so clear, like Zappos, that you hire the same type of people, the same personality type people to come and mand certain divisions. And you get then this
consistent uniform feel.
That's right.
of experience.
Yes.
I suspect this is not a question that we have answered here, you know.
Well, I mean, I think it's a good thing to look at. While you're small, it's still manageable, but later on, you may grow twice your size, three times your size, or you may start, you know, what you call global domination and, you know, then it becomes important. What is the BFM standards of behavior?
Li Jiaping of The Listening Tree. We're talking about creating structures to take brands to its internal and external audiences. So far, we've touched on creating the templates for your
look and feel.
And we have talked about SOPs.
Standard operating procedures.
Coming up, we'll look at behavioral competencies. This is BFM 89.9, the business station.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
You're tuned to Marketing Mojo on Resource Center, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. I like that one. Branding with Li Jia Ping. I've said it every week.
Sounds great.
We're talking about creating structures. All right. Once you know your five P's, you drill down into each area, creating the structures. Behavioral competencies as structure. I'm really surprised.
For every organization, you have two forms of performance measurements. One is KPIs and goals and objectives, very hard, tangible, measurable targets. Basically, if you are here to reduce the turnover of your staff, there's a target, right? If it's now 10%, you need to reduce it to 8%. So you can actually see through a headcount of people who leave, that's measurable. Behavioral competencies are something that is very much important for brands if they want to grow to become world-class brands.
Whose KPI is it to manage these behavioral competencies?
It's everybody's KPI, but it has to be led and driven by the CEO and closely supported by the HR, right? By HR. What happens is why behavioral competency is so important is that KPIs and goals and objectives is all about what you do.
Meeting targets.
Competencies are about the way you do it. So if you talk about, remember we talked about setting up your values. So if your values are about excellence, dynamism, respect, so you should actually start putting those words into the behavioral competency. Why? Because if I'm this person who is a high achiever, but I don't demonstrate respect, so I'm a bully, as an example, I'm excellent and dynamic, but I'm not respectful. So it is up to the management to say, what do we do with this person? Because if you don't do anything, you don't counsel, you don't retrain, then what's happening is you're making a mockery of that value called respect.
This is really an HR issue though, isn't it?
Absolutely. In HR issues, who drives the brand? People. And who manages the people? HR. Actually, it's not just a HR issue, it's a CEO issue. What leaders are judged on every day is what they reward, measure and attend to, and how they react during crisis. So if you are willing to forgive someone's non-brand behavior, you're sending out a message to everybody else that says, well, why do I need to behave
in a particular way?
Why do I need to be respectful? You know, because I've just seen you allow or enable someone to not be respectful.
You're talking about an ideal situation though, aren't you?
Well, yes, everybody wants to be ideal, but there are brands out there who do very well in this.
How do you manage these kind of things? Because sometimes, like you say, you know, the smaller the organization, the more dependent you are on certain key people. Mm. And sometimes because these are key people, they don't necessarily follow that kind of, okay, this is our value, therefore I behave this way because I am key.
There's no right or there's no wrong. Mm. It is really up to the CEO what type of ship he wants to have, what type of people running the ship he wants to have. If he says, I am here all about profits and we are sell, 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 and let's be a great selling brand. We only measure hard targets.
That's fine. KPIs, yeah.
Right. And that can last you quite a long time. But later on, when you talk about Gen Y, sustainability in terms of maintaining people, lowering your people turnover, attrition, all of this adds up. People don't count that as a cost. But all of these are costs. You're going to come to a stage where you can't seem to hire people anymore because people are not necessarily just driven by hard targets anymore. They also want to belong. They also want to grow in a way that they feel supported. So supported, you know, belonging, they are all behavioral needs. So this is why organizations can no longer just be target-driven organizations. You also need to be, you have this soft emotional values in there.
Should this also be a document of what these are the kinds of behavioral competencies we want?
Yes, yes. For a lot of companies, because as soon as they hear behavioral competencies, they freak out because it can get very complicating. There could be, you know, volumes and volumes of descriptions on how to behave using certain labels such as visionary leadership, teamwork. And it becomes so much embroiled in this behavioral jargon that you lose the lower staff, the lower ranking staff, which is the executives, you know, the non-executives. And they're also as crucial as top people for delivering your brand. I just recommend keeping it simple. You have a set of values. It could be 4 or 5 or 6 or like Zappos 10. And you keep to it. If I say respectful, right, it's so easy to define what does respect mean. You treat others, you know, in a way that is respectful. Right. You do not raise your voice, all of that. If you see it, how difficult is it not to spot someone being respectful or not respectful? It's quite easy, right? So if you have only 4 or 5 values, it's very easy to remember those values. And then as you go along your work, everybody should then look out and be more conscious about, am I behaving in a dynamic way or a way that's fulfilling an excellence value, you know, and am I doing it in a respectful way? That's the question everybody needs to ask themselves at every point of interaction. And when you start doing this on a regular basis, we talk about Ritz-Carlton. Ritz-Carlton is one of the top customer service brands in the world. And what is the value that drives them? They have this saying called, we are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen.
I love it.
And you can imagine this imagery of ladies and gentlemen is self-explanatory. You know what a lady behaves, how a lady behaves and how a gentleman behaves. Of course, you've got to teach, you know, some of the ones who are from a different culture and have different values attached to ladies and gentlemen. But once you define it, everybody understands there's a certain type of decorum that they need to have, certain type of behavior. You know, ladies don't speak on top of their voices. You know, everything is done in a very perhaps dulcet tone. And, you know, you treat everybody respectfully. You hold doors open if you're a gentleman. All of that is, you know, well documented.
So based on today's discussion, let's go back to Guardian Angel, right? Mm. So the logo part, color, size, all that, very simple
yes.
to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of processes, standard procedures, that too, to some extent, is quite simple as long as you know what are the things you need to do within the organization. So is next one, of course, is the behavioral competencies.
Yes, that is the most crucial, actually.
Actually, I think so too.
Yeah.
And I suspect it's probably the one that's most overlooked.
Yes.
Pass to HR, not to brands.
Yes. I'll tell you a great story about Ritz-Carlton. You know, if you have time, I would urge everybody to go in and study Ritz-Carlton Gold Standards. It talks about how they treat customers. For them, the customer is almost put on this pedestal, right? But they're also very, very strict on how their staff is treated. So if a customer acts out of line, they actually have gone so far as actually to say, we will check you in another hotel, but you are no longer welcomed in the Ritz-Carlton.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So immediately what that tells everybody is that everyone is valued.
So if I'm standing here waiting on you,
yes.
you have to treat me with respect also.
Yes. Yes. And Ritz-Carlton staff, you know, if you ask for directions, they don't point you the way, they walk you to the way.
Li Jiaping, Managing Partner of The Listening Tree, a brand consultancy. Thank you very much again.
You're welcome.
So next week we'll be looking at... You don't know, do you?
I don't. You tell me.
This is Marketing Mojo on Resource Center and I'm Lim Soon Hing, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.